Perception versus the truth. Jason Burmis on today's News Talk, TNT.
You dirty, stinking election denier. Again, folks, was going to lead with something else. But when I hear that terminology, it really will bring me to what I was going to talk about. And that's the dumbing down of our society. Now, again, we're hearing election denier. That is clearly to be utilized to equate with what? Holocaust denial. You hate Jewish people. Okay, and I witnessed it firsthand because I was a 9/11 denier, and they'd always love to associate that with anti-Semitism as well. And really, if you do look at what has mainly in our culture been linked with denial, it is Holocaust denial. So when they say election denier, not I'd like an audit, sir. Not, oh, he's one of those election auditors out there. Most people wouldn't even know what that is because we are so damn dumbed down. Now, I'm going to get into my dumbed down story for the day. I have not been able to receive international money transfers. Now, in my bank, I've spent several hours now personally with a couple different individuals. We just couldn't do it. So this is going to bring me to a letter in the mail that I got today. And it just is just so mind-blowing. I don't know what to say about it. Now, I went to start a new account with a separate bank. Now, very, very openly, I said the only reason I'm opening this account is to get an international wire transfer sent to me on a regular basis. Can we do that? Yes, sir. We can do that. So I hand over the paperwork, my initial amount of money. The first thing the person behind the counter says to me, obviously under 25, says, so when you send an international wire, I said, let's stop. I'm never sending an international wire. I need to be able to receive them. That's what I need. She's like, oh, okay. So then I sit down with another very nice young gentleman. We have a great chat about upcoming concerts and who's going to be in town this weekend. He tells me about his upcoming vacation. And again, I tell him that the only reason I'm opening this account is for an international wire transfer. So we talk. I sign some things. Another young gentleman, again, under the age of 25, I don't think I dealt with anybody even close to 30, comes over and gives me a sheet of paper with the instructions for wire transfers. It does not say international on it. Now, I immediately say to both of them, are you sure that this is the international wire transfer form that I need? Absolutely, I say, because it doesn't have a SWIFT code on it. And then the young man says, no, I think the SWIFT code in our case is your account number, but you can call me if there's any problem. Okay, so I walk on my way, and I think something's a little fishy, but I hold back. I get a letter in the mail today that the young man actually, when he handed me all of my bank account information, handed me back the scan of my license. He handed me all of the paperwork that I had signed to have the bank account. The only thing they actually had was my money, and then I had to return there with all the documentation. Now, I then mentioned to the teller, that was the first person I dealt with, okay, that I needed to do this international bank transfer. There was no SWIFT code on the information there. So then she called somebody else up and started talking about bank transfers. I said, international bank transfer. So after about five more minutes, indeed, the sheet the young gentleman gave me that I wouldn't have been able to use because I didn't actually start a bank account there until today was completely and totally incorrect. And instead, I'm not going to show it all to you, but I got this little sheet of paper here with totally separate information. This was a process that now took several days, and we're not there yet. We don't know if it's actually going to go through, but if that's not the dumbing down of America, I don't know what is. But if you're in the UK, you can stand in the light. How about You fancy a bank holiday weekend at a music festival for truth and freedom with the tribe out there with 30 Awake artists, including Danny Rampling and Mobius Loop, an all-night acoustic fire pit, bouncing castles in Hope, Sussex for the children, plus loads of amazing stalls and scrumptious food vendors. This is an event not to be missed by anyone who's aware of the truth of the world. A Stand in the Park and Light Paper present Stand in the Light, a truth music festival in the beautiful Lake District on May 24th to the 27th. It'll be here like that. The last one just passed. You can get 4 days of camping and full access for the whole festival for just £60 plus a booking fee. Children under 5 come free. There is no better bargain anywhere. Visit our website now to make sure you don't miss out on what's going to be a brilliant weekend for the whole freedom-loving family. StandInTheLight.uk. See you there. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to hit the headlines with the man, the myth, the legend himself, Adam Ruckus Clark. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT after this.
Conversations to inform and include.
It's meant for everyday people to understand.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
New data shows that Earth orbit gained a record number of satellites last year, nearly 3,000, adding to the ever-increasing congestion around the planet. Here with the story, joining me once again is TNT News producer Adam Clark. Adam, what do you got for us, brother?
Well, my man, as if we didn't have enough to worry about dealing with young, inexperienced ignorance at banking institutions, we also have to worry about whether or not a couple pieces of space junk are going to collide with a satellite and maybe potentially ruin our communications, set the world on fire, fall on top of our heads. Who knows? Because it is a veritable traffic jam going on up there, my friend, right above our heads. It's pretty wild. But yes, the report is that thanks to a new report coming from space technology firm Slingshot Aerospace, that was a new one on me, Earth's orbital space is becoming more congested after placing nearly 3,000 satellites up there just last year. A total of 2,877 of them, to be specific. We are speaking satellites here. Those were deployed in the year of 2023. That is up by 14.6% from the year previous, bringing the total number of active and inactive satellites in orbit to 12,597 as of the end of last year. This, according to the report. Of these, 3,356 are inactive satellites, and 5,648 of the 9,241 active satellites belong to one man and his company, Mr. Elon Musk and his Starlink. That's right. He's got quite a fair share. That's wild. Nearly 80% of the deployments in 2023, 2,285 specifically, were communication satellites, according to the report. Melissa Quinn, general manager of Slingshot Aerospace, said in a statement on April 30th, which was when they released the report, quote, "The industry has been saying space is becoming more congested for years, but now reality is setting in and the pressure is on to address the increasing risk in orbit," end quote. Let's see. Furthermore, I believe she says, quote, "With LEO, low Earth orbit, becoming more crowded than ever, there is a real risk to satellites that provide valuable services, including internet, weather forecasting, and land use tracking. This presents a critical need to work together in order to protect everyday life on Earth," end quote. Yikes. The issue of space debris has long been cause for concern. The LEO, LEO, low Earth orbit, which is about 1,200 miles above the Earth's surface, i.e. our heads, is a quote unquote orbital space junkyard. That's how they describe it. Who are they? Well, that's what NASA officials wrote in an article posted on its website last year. The space agency stated that there are, quote, millions of pieces of space junk flying in LEO, end quote. This including parts of rockets and tiny flecks of paint from spacecraft. Oh, it's true. Ms. Quinn said there are, quote, thousands of inactive satellites, end quote, in LEO, among them 187 that were retired in 2023. The statement, again, coming from Melissa Quinn, quote, "If left alone, a LEO satellite can take years to decay naturally, depending on its orbit, which adds to the congestion problem currently faced in LEO," end quote. the GEO, the geosynchronous orbit, which is located about 22,000 miles above the surface of the Earth, our heads, is also getting more crowded. According to the report, the average distance between satellites in GEO decreased by a lovely Illuminati-looking number, 33%, between 2010 and 2020. Three, from about 280 miles to about 186 miles, and the report predicts that the trend will continue as new satellites are deployed to GEO. Ms. Quinn said that, quote, the data shows that a congestion problem is brewing in GEO. This closer proximity for operations means that the spacecraft that are responsible for critical infrastructure here on Earth are also feeling the squeeze of a more populated GEO regime, end quote. And let me see real quickly. As of the end of last year, there were 789 inactive satellites in GEO, according to the report. I think you get the idea. We got a lot of stuff floating up there above our heads, Jason, and it's only a matter of time before something happens. But what could go wrong, my friend? What say you?
Oh, I got a lot to say about this one. So let's start with the Musker Do and Starlink. This is part of the program that NASA openly called the artificial skin that surrounds the planet. Now, the next thing to understand is I think there's a lot of hype surrounding this, and I want people to start using their noggin for a moment. Remember everybody talking about the Chinese weather balloon, the spy balloon? That's Johnny Nonsense. That was never real. Seymour Hersh actually came out and talked about that as what it was. It was part of a satellite system that is below low Earth orbit and uses traditional balloon technology, which NASA has an entire page dedicated to. Just so you understand, they put these balloons up there with things the size of buses, like this one was, for navigation systems. Okay, and it's in the Arctic region. And notice we saw several of those later on. That's because there are so many of them up there right now. They are saturating those as well, and these things are man-made, so they're gonna have problems. Remember we talked about that? Human mistakes, things don't always go as planned. Well, the weaponization of space, also a very real thing. In our last segment, we talked about China's endeavors. They've already done it. They already have satellite systems as well, and many of them are corporate satellites, so they are global. Now, the next thing to posit is that, you know, I don't necessarily believe how crowded they're saying space is, right? If we are sending rockets and probes up there, we're not hitting these satellites, all right, in this orbital move. That's yet to happen. Now, it's not like we're putting rockets up all the time. I think it's a large area, but it makes me remain skeptical of the dangers that they're presenting. I think what this really is more of an admission of the amount of these devices that are now up there. They're still not talking about the network that is below low Earth orbit. So they want to keep you in that space realm, right? Not even have you talk about the balloons. And then the thing that's totally off the table is the weaponization of space and that competition that has clearly been taking place. But meanwhile, you still have some kind of a pseudo boogeyman, if you will, via this technology. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little tricky to confirm what they're saying. Always, anytime anybody says anything about space, it's very, very difficult to confirm that with your own research, I would argue. So what a convenient scenario for the powers that be, yes? It's interesting that the idea here is that they're talking about there's too much junk in space. And as you alluded to, don't you think we would probably have more problems than you know? I would think that stuff would be falling out of the sky all the time. Actually, I should be reporting about this every day, but we don't. So maybe the idea is to give this impression that that's going on. And I'm like, what's the end result here? Well, what if everyone can come together and agree, okay, we need to like slow down on what we're doing. We need to not put so much in space. We need to start regulating it. And by then it's far too late. Look, Elon Musk, the Western world, the United States, we've already got like probably more than our competitors already do. So that's going to, you know, that's going to hold them back and prevent them from growing and expanding in that that area while they do their space weapon stuff. I don't know what's up with the space warfare thing, but I'm afraid we're probably going to find out sooner or later, huh?
Let's hope not. But you know what? Dennis Bushnell, the chief scientist at NASA, was actually pressed on this issue in 2018 at the FIRE conference. And he had posited during his speech they were going to be rounding up all this space junk, again, talking about this hype six plus years ago now at this point. And he was talking about magnetics. And then he was challenged on that by a young individual going, hey, wait a minute, most of these things aren't made of metal. What are you talking about? And he quickly ushered the conversation in a different direction. Methinks there might be more to it than we know. Adam, thank you so much for joining us, brother. We will see you tomorrow night. We got to take a quick break. We got more coming. It's my show. I am Jason Burmis. More TNT after this.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Royd.
Chuck, when it comes to AI, there's a lot of talk about how AI will take people's jobs. And there's also talk about whether AI art is real art or not.
Will it take jobs? I think it's going to streamline jobs. You know, I think people, we're going to have a bunch of dinosaurs that sit there and go, that's not art. We're going to have a bunch of people that go, that's not a way to write an email. But the fact of the matter is, I just finished this task in 30 seconds and it takes you 5 minutes and a coffee. Like, there's somebody that's going to hit the finish line first on that one. So I think it's important that we streamline the BS. You know, let's get all the call centers, all of the government, all the rego, all the BS that we need to deal with. Let's put that into an AI model. Thank you very much. Every Centerlink visit, realistically, should be happening through an AI LLM for these. Like, let's get rid of that. Free up some humans to do better human things.
Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Royd on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
The human mind is like a computer. No matter how efficient it may be, its reliability is only as great as the information fed into it.
That's a campaign promise.
Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
You're hearing it.
TNT.
My next guest is someone I was fortunate enough to meet on the road over at the Reawaken America Tour. She analyzes such things as pop culture, entertainment, and globalism. Jamie Hanshaw, thank you so much for joining us. So before we get started, how did you kind of get into the arena of questioning the mainstream and then into some of the more esoteric issues?
I am a second generation conspiracy theorist, so my parents raised me on a steady diet of weird VHS tapes, Clinton Chronicles, FEMA camps, black helicopters, all of the 90s conspiracy stuff. And then after the Big Nine event, I found Alex Jones, I found your documentary. I was just telling my mom that was one of the first Big Nine event documentaries I ever saw. And then I read a lot of, David Icke, Michael Tesserian, was listening to Alex Jones, Freeman Fly, all Jordan Maxwell, a lot of the classics. So I've been in this arena since at least 2005, and it's been a crazy ride.
I would say it's definitely been a crazy ride as well. I guess I kind of predate you a little bit, but I'm probably a little bit older as well. And 9/11, certainly for me, was when I started to take things more seriously. You know, prior to that, I had read the Time Life books, the Unsolved Mysteries, things like Aliens, etc. Did fascinate me. But the more I scratched the surface of that, the more I found that that seemed to be some kind of a psychological operation. And whereas I had always kind of, I would say, kind of put things of an occult nature to the side as, you know, Hollywood, not real, marginal, there is, in fact, a lot to do with modern society, modern geopolitics, and occultism in general. And I know that's something that you focus on. So kind of speak to that a little bit. You know, occultism, when you really look at it, it's simply hidden knowledge. And there are many flavors of it. And it certainly enters our cultural and political arena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, occult just means secret. So it can mean several different things. So on that journey in the early 2000s, I was reading a lot about mind control. I was reading a lot about MKUltra, Project Paperclip, those old chestnuts. And I was also learning a lot about occult magic. So formal, ceremonial magic, like the Golden Dawn, like Aleister Crowley, tarot cards would be a part of that. And so I just dove headfirst. I saw that movie Zeitgeist, and I said, well, if all of these things are untrue, then everything is just a level playing field, and I want to absorb everything I can. So I kind of did that, but I was also exposed to a lot of tinfoil hat subject matter along with occult subject matter, and I noticed these things going together. So I started to realize magic is not for children. It is not a plaything. It is a actual science. It is causing changes to occur in conformity with your will. And then so I started to break it down. There's a difference between stage magic and ceremonial magic. So stage magic would be just like tricks, card tricks, stuff like that, the rabbit out of the hat. Ceremonial magic is more dealing with forces. So invocating entities into yourself and drawing entities through evocation. You know, you get that picture of a magician in a circle conjuring up spirits, right? So I'm like, this stuff is real, and they are doing it in a scientifically applied way in conjunction with propaganda and also like technological advancements, psychotronic weapons, stuff like that. So all of this could be wrapped into the definition of sorcery, which is like mind control, making people slaves through their hidden use of psychology and propaganda. So there's all different routes that I was taking. I actually did one book on magic, but then I had to stop selling that one because I came to a crossroads in my life, and I'm like, all of this occult juju magic is not helping me. It is not solving any of my real world problems. It is adjacent to evil people that I know are doing nefarious things. So I kind of had to put all that aside, and I did a kind of a 180, and I got rid of all my magic and tarot and crystals and all of that stuff. And we joined the Orthodox Church. So I still sell two books that deal with all of this subject matter. But the first one, I had a lot of ecumenist thinking that I don't want to put out there anymore.
So let's talk about magic and the magical kingdom in particular. Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, you said magic is not for children. And right. Yet that's really where the vast majority of my generation, the generation after mine, equate magic, the magical kingdom, Disney, you know, even Fantasia when I was a kid, and Mickey Mouse in that magical garb with his wand and his robe really normalized that term and shed it in a very, very positive light as though it were something for entertainment or something for children.
I do talk a lot about Disney on my channel because that is not just a fun thing for children. It was actually they call it Imagineering. So they're building their world based on co-opting your imagination and using that against you. So Disneyland is a military industrial complex. Most of the rides you would go to in Disneyland or Disney World are sponsored by military corporations. That big ball at Epcot is sponsored by Siemens, which goes all the way back to World War II. So you are actually seeing a giant commercial that you don't even know that you're watching. And so things like Small World, that's sponsored by UNESCO and the UN. Other rides are sponsored by, you know, Dole Fruits or HP computers or whatever. So these are, you know, military contractors that are working with Walt Disney. A lot of my research actually goes back to the beginning of the creation of Walt Disney Studios and who Walt was as a person. It's a very deep dive, interesting character to get to know.
Jamie, let's take a break and let's get into that on the flip side of this, because I'm also fascinated how Disneyland as a structure in Florida was really brought into fruition from the military industrial complex, the CIA in particular, to get all of that land. And I would argue Disney is the Leviathan, the powerhouse in the entertainment arena right now. Star Wars, The Simpsons, there isn't really an important pop culture property they don't own. So we're going to go to the headlines. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more Disney after this. It's TNT.
The news you need when you need it.
Oh, you have a deep voice.
TNT.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Israeli forces intensified their military operations in Rafah, Gaza, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu affirming the continuation of the assault despite international criticisms and calls for ceasefire. Residents in western North Carolina are protesting against the potential construction of an electric vehicle battery manufacturing plant on a newly purchased 1,400-acre property in Burke and McDowell counties.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We are back with Jamie Hanshaw, and a lot of people don't understand that even in the beginnings of Disney, they're very associated with the military-industrial complex, the United States military in particular, where they did propaganda films. You know, there's that famous Donald Duck video where he's singing along to the New World Order song via Hitler and the Japanese. He has that nightmare that he's part of that. There were a slew of those. So kind of speak to that. Who was Walt Disney? How did he come up with this? And what kind of backing was there from the military industrial complex?
He was actually made a special agent by, I believe, President Hoover and the FBI. So immediately after Pearl Harbor, they commandeered the Walt Disney Studios, and over 90% of their production went into manufacturing wartime propaganda. So the reason that we, you know, pay federal income tax, or why is that a thing nowadays? Back then, it wasn't so popular because it wasn't a law. But Donald Duck came out and they made a cartoon called The New Spirit where he pays his taxes. So then that got the American economy going with the war bonds. So cartoons to sell war bonds. Minnie Mouse keeps her bacon grease so they can make ammunitions. Donald Duck joins the military. Who else? So you've not just cartoon propaganda films, but actual army training films were made by Disney, and those are super creepy. If you want to look at any of these, it's called Walt Disney on the Front Lines, and I've been doing live streams on my channel, Jamie Hanshaw, at YouTube, and we just covered all of these different cartoons and propaganda series from that time period, World War II time period.
I watch those as well. You know, they don't have the major Disney characters, but they are very, very enlightening as to how incorporated Disney was with this military culture. And, you know, one of the other things they were big on propagating was the space race. And Wernher von Braun, you talked about Operation Paperclip, but really our modern day vision, aside from Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, was really brought to us by Disney and Wernher in front of all of us. He used to have, you know, what was it, The Wild World of Disney and like the Sunday night thing. He would come out there and he would speak to everybody about the future in his heavy and thick German accent. So along history, you constantly see Disney promoting these ideas that are very much on the political agenda.
Yeah, I have a picture in one of my book, Walt and Wernher von Braun shaking hands on his, like you said, on his television special. And fast forward to about 1995, now they're getting into aliens. So before it was rockets, it was the moon, stuff like that. But in the 90s, they wanted to kick it up a notch, and they had a secret meeting at Walt Disney World, and they invited scientists, key like people, strategic people, because they wanted to get the public ready to accept an alien encounter. And they even had a ride to go along with this called Alien Encounters, which was based on Ridley Scott's Alien movie, which was too frightening for children, so they had to scale it back, and it was still too frightening, so they had to close down the ride Alien Encounter because children would just leave in tears. But so they were trying to prepare children of the 90s to accept whatever cuckoo bananas alien invasion they're going to stage.
At some level, they were very much successful with me. You know, like, again, it wasn't until I really started peeling back the veil, things like the alien autopsy video on Fox, the amount of UFO videos that were out there. Again, this is pre-internet, before you could really scrutinize them or have an idea of where they were coming from. The X-Files, probably my favorite mainstream show of that time period. But when you really look at some of the nefarious nature of Disney, one of the things that always sticks out in my head is the idea of lemmings, because people still use that today. And the idea is that if you're a lemming, you just kind of follow people off a cliff, as though lemmings run off a cliff. Well, Disney invented that. Disney was doing, I think, Wild Frontier series. And apparently there's some guy sitting there going, you know, these lemmings, they're just not exciting enough. They're no prairie dog. We need something else. So they positioned the camera under a cliff and literally pushed the lemmings off the cliff and created this mythos that they ran off the cliff and committed suicide and just followed each other to their death. That's a myth that stands to this day. Yeah, you can actually look that up. It's one of the more honest things that Wikipedia will talk about. And that's just mainline. If Disney would do that, I would argue they would do anything, upon any type of great narrative or agenda, Jamie.
Well, you mentioned that. And so a lot of these footage gathering expeditions that they would go on are just covers for espionage. Because Walt was a world traveler, he was in, he had so many awards and accolades, you couldn't even name them all. I listed them all in my book, but I can't even remember. You know, he was probably the most decorated person of the, 20th century. And given carte blanche into everyone's home, because it's under the guise of like fun family entertainment. But then when you start studying witchcraft and occultism, you're like, this is the darkest thing I can imagine, because it's coming under the guise of innocent, just good children's cartoons and fun. But when you actually study magic, you learn that the entire thing is inherently sexual. So let's say you are talking about like tarot cards, and they have the suit of the wands. So everybody in magic knows that a magic wand is actually a phallus. And a cup is, or a chalice is actually, you know, the woman's genitals. So every time you're playing Harry Potter, you stick a magic wand in a little kid's hand. He is essentially waving around a metaphorical phallus, because this is how they believe that you acquire things in the world through sexual power. And so, you know, magic is magic, basically, yeah.
I'm just saying, sex magic is a topic that we could probably go into another time. We've got about a minute left in the segment. Let people know what you're up to and where they can check your stuff out.
Okay, well, I talk about sex magic all the time on Rockfin. You can find it. My channel's called Defense Against the Dark Arts, Jamie Hanshaw. And that's kind of the funny name that I've given myself. I'm the Defense Against the Dark Arts professor. So I'm on YouTube, Jamie Hanshaw. We talk a little lighter subjects, but then if you want the heavier topics, go to Rockfin. And of course, I'm always on with my husband, Jay Dyer, at jaysanalysis.com.
And you guys do exceptional work, and it was great meeting you out in Tennessee. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking RFK Jr. and beyond. He just dropped an extremely powerful video that was not only shot well, but really gets his message across. Far from perfect, but we're going to talk about that and a lot more. Final segment of my show, it's Jason Burmis. After this, more TNT.
When a crisis hits, close to home and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve.
Keep coming.
The demand for charitable services has skyrocketed, and nonprofits are rising to meet the needs. Healing. Nurturing. Rescuing. Honoring. Protecting. Caring. Inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations of all sizes, across all missions, has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. Together, we change the world. The Nonprofit Alliance.
Last week, Brandon met a girl on a dating app. One day after work, he finally found the courage to ask her out. No answer. He started to panic. Was he being too pushy? Maybe it was too...
Hey, sorry I didn't respond. I was driving. I would love to go on a date. How does tonight sound?
Brandon tried to play it cool, but inside he knew. A girl so smart, so responsible. She must be a keeper.
Jason Burmis on today's News Talk, TNT.
We are now joined by Trevor Fitzgibbons. You know his work with Assange and more. Trevor, I was on your social media feed today. I saw this video that was recently posted by RFK Jr. You know, you had the little post that he led with, you know, he's a crackpot, he's nuts, he's crazy. And really, these are monikers that the mainstream media have labeled him since he's decided to run for the president of the United States and go third party. And I would say be the first viable third party candidate since Ross Perot in a very, very different environment. So you're obviously a supporter of RFK Jr. What did you think about this move and where he's going in this race currently?
I think it's like the wild, wild west. We have no idea what's going to happen. I think he has a lot of momentum. I think there are a lot of disaffected Biden Democrats. And I also think there's a lot of Trump supporters, people who supported Trump the last go around, that realized that there was a lot of kind of empty rhetoric when it comes to COVID, when it comes to taking on the deep state and then turning around and you know, hiring people like Mike Pompeo and then promoting Mike Pompeo to Secretary of State, and people like John Bolton, who got us into the Iraq War, architects of the Iraq War. You know, and I just think it's fraudulent, and I don't understand why so many of like the MAGA like have their blinders on when it comes to this stuff, because like Trump talks a big game, you know, but when you look at the record, when he had a chance to pardon Julian Assange, when he had a chance to pardon Edward Snowden, he that. And then on the other hand, you have, you know, as you know, President Biden, who, you know, he was asked about Assange in the Rose Garden. And I think I don't think he knows what day it is. Right.
So he doesn't know what day it is. And so, he absolutely 100%. But did he even know what day it was 4 years ago when they installed him? Right. Like, because I was watching him at the Democratic primaries and I couldn't believe that he was the one that they selected. At first I saw Cory Booker up there with Kamala Harris. They checked a lot of boxes. I thought they'd try to move that through. Then Elizabeth Warren, other than the Pocahontas thing, she checked a lot of boxes. It was really shocking to me that they went with Joe Biden because he clearly wasn't mentally coherent. However, that's kind of been the push. He's just president that's not there.
Yeah, and I still don't know. I don't know if he is going to be like the final nominee. I mean, who knows what will happen at the convention? I think it's going to be crazy. It's like Chicago all over again, except we don't have Bill Kunstler with us, unfortunately. But it's. I think it's going to be chaos at the convention. All I know is that the Democrats are completely freaked out right now. I mean, and just to be crystal clear, you know, I worked for the Obama campaign, right? I worked for Senator Patty Murray's reelection in 98, you know, but that's when, you know, being a Democrat meant you had the principles. You know, you were opposed to, you were in support of free speech. You were opposed to deplatforming people. You were anti-war, you know, and things have just shifted so much. And that's what the film and what Bobby talks about a lot about. So everybody, please go see it. Check it out. It's so good. And you know, you talked about a little bit the beginning of this film. Bobby's just like quoting all these papers and newspapers of the media claiming he's, you know, senile and vile and, you know, probably has a crack pipe voice and all of this. But then they also talk about when he was on the scene as an environmental lawyer, he was the darling of the Democratic Party. They loved him, right? He's taking that same tenacity, right, that he used to go after big corporate polluters like Monsanto, like Massey Energy. And now he's applying it to Big Pharma, and Big Pharma is so powerful, and they control the media in the United States. They're just so powerful. So they turn their sights on him. They don't want a guy like Bobby in there.
So let's talk Trump for a second, because I think you were pretty accurate in the fact that, you know, you mentioned Pompeo, for instance, terrible person, nowhere near Secretary of State. He's on camera talking about lying, cheating, stealing, having entire courses on it when he was the head of the Central Intelligence Agency. He certainly seems to be the one that muddied the waters when Dana Rohrabacher was sent over as an envoy for Assange. And you really couldn't pardon him at that point. He hadn't been charged. But all of those charges should have been dropped and he should have been protected before the fact. Now it doesn't, you know, it doesn't fall light on me, and it shouldn't on Trump, that they've now charged him with the Espionage Act in that Florida case. You know, so yeah, it's great. It's all well and good and well as Assange. It's come back around on you. I think that's where you get the sympathy, and at least where I am sympathetic to Trump, because clearly they don't want him there. However, you know, you mentioned Bolton as well. Well, what about Mattis? What about McMaster? What about Liddell? What about Peter Thiel, who I'm no fan of and eventually stabbed him in the back? All of these people are creatures of that swamp.
What about the COVID vaccine, right? And I think that's a real vulnerability for Trump. I mean, Bobby can exploit that if he could ever get up on a debate stage. A lot of Trump's followers, the one place where he's so vulnerable is on the COVID vaccine, because they know that he was wrong. But even to this day, he's putting out posts on True Social bragging about the vaccine, that it was the wonderful thing. And I mean, I have so many vaccine injured that are out there that have been struggling to survive with no money and insurance that won't cover it. People like Maddie DeGaray, you know, who was 12 years old when she signed up for the Pfizer trial, and she can't walk now, you know. People who have just lost their lives because of this vaccine. And the fact that he won't own it, he won't say he made a mistake, he won't say the lockdowns were a mistake, instead he's like actually bragging about it. I think that's a real vulnerability for him when it comes to RFK. And
I think his inability at all to ever admit he's wrong on anything is that's actually what I led the show with, is he doesn't have any humility. He isn't humble. And the bottom line is, if you want to be a human being and really connect with us, there are times that you have to say you got it wrong. And that's probably the most egregious example is Operation
Bobby. Bobby will do that. You know, Bobby does admit he makes mistakes, and that he, you know, no one, no scientist, no medical, no doctor has blinders on to new facts as they emerge. And as they emerge, as you learn more, when you realize you've been duped, right? You just come clean. And as long as you've got integrity and you're honest, the American people can be a forgiving group. But when you just keep denying until it's like hitting you in the face, by that time, most of the time you've lost.
Well, you know, I would also argue, when we talk about Assange, you know, he ran a campaign of loving the WikiLeaks, couldn't get enough of the WikiLeaks. Have you seen the WikiLeaks? Right. And then even later on, when he's out there talking about how we need to get out of Syria, comes out, says it publicly on television twice. Then there's the non-attack in Douma. You know, those missiles he sent in there didn't just go nowhere. But later, it was still WikiLeaks that published those OPCW documents that clearly showed that there were no attacks there. And his administration, you know, I saw the hearing, said that was Russia propaganda. So again, you can't sit there and go Russia, Russia, Russia hoax when it is a hoax via Russiagate, but then say Russia, Russia, Russia on the other side when there's a clear hoax from your military industrial complex. And, you know, recently with him talking about these picks possibly for the vice president, I think that hurts him. I'm not in love with who RFK Jr. has said he's picked either, by the way. But I mean, Marco Rubio, are you kidding me? Tim Scott, this is a sick joke. Like people like
they're
myself,
all just the epitome of the deep state, and it's especially Rubio. I mean, I don't, but whatever. I mean, if he were smart, I think he would probably choose Tulsi Gabbard, but I don't know if he is going to do that.
But then again, you know, Tulsi isn't perfect either. I don't like her stance on the protesters right now. She's had problems when we do get into military conflicts. I think that's one of the big issues with Trump. In fact, I think that's the big thing that, if anything, stifled the RFK Jr. campaign was his position on Israel and Palestine right now. And that's one of the biggest things holding him back. Because, hey, man, I hate both parties. I'm more than willing to give my vote over to RFK Jr. if I see he's the real deal. I don't like that policy in the Middle East. Is he better than the other guy? Well, the other guy can't speak. And that's just like a thing that's running that some people say, you know, it's the O'Biden administration. Some people say it's Larry Fink. Some people say it's by committee. It doesn't matter. It's the most outward puppet regime of my lifetime. And it's grotesque. Then you get into Trump. And again, I can't help but feel sympathetic. I don't think that he should have been found guilty in the civil cases that he was. I think he is going to be found guilty and thrown in jail in at least one of these four cases. I think it's almost a foregone conclusion in this one. The question is what happens after that guilty verdict? A lot of people,
if they throw him in jail, he will be elected president 100%.
But don't you think, so I had this conversation with Roger Stone a couple of years ago. Now, I've also posited, had Trump said, I'm not running again, they would have left him alone other than to assassinate his character in the media. They wouldn't have come up with all these criminal trials, et cetera. But I said the moment that he was actually going to go for it again, they disliked him enough that they're going to put him in jail. The Espionage Act, which, you know, a lot of people call it the strongest case. I think it's bogus, but it doesn't matter what I think. You know, that comes with treason, a.k.a. a death penalty. I don't necessarily think they'd kill the guy. Absolutely not. Yeah. But as the excuse... as the excuse to take him off the ballot in certain states just in time for the election, I do think they're going to try to fast track the rest of these trials. I predict this next trial, this one that's right now, doesn't go another 3 weeks, maybe four max, and we get a result there. They're going to try to fast track the next one. So what is your viewpoint on that lawfare? Because I do agree, obviously, with his base and others, that would normally elect him. But I don't think we have free and fair elections in this country, newsflash. And two, I think that these people will do anything to get him off the ballot. And if they do that in certain key states, as you know, it would be mathematically impossible for him to win.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think we could actually have a contingent election. I mean, if you if you were to have the election today based on the polling that's in the battleground states, Kennedy comes close to denying both Biden and Trump enough electoral votes to actually right win the presidency. And if those numbers hold, and if he like gets to debate, I mean, if he were on the same debate stage as Trump and Biden, after that debate, I would imagine it's a whole new election.
You know, well, let's stop, because there's no chance Biden's debating anybody. If he's even on that stage with Trump, that's really the interesting thing. I can't see them putting Biden on the stage under any circumstance. He's not even really running for president right now.
A lot of people thought, and I did too, I thought his State of the Union address, I thought he really performed well for that address. I mean, they jack him up with so much stuff. He's a spitfire, you know? I don't know if he knows what he's saying, but he certainly is a lot more coherent than on normal days. I don't know what's going to happen. I just know that the lawfare is horrible. Bobby has spoken out against the lawfare. He's criticized the Democrats for that. I mean, if the only way you can win is to try to tear down your opponent, you don't deserve to win. You don't even deserve to run. And, you know, of course, there's retail politics, and that's always part of the equation. But you got to have something positive for the future. And I just think that the majority of the country, I think a lot of those independent voters right now, if they lock him up and throw him in prison, I think a lot of it's kind of like a punk rock thing to do. I think a lot of independents would flip over to Trump, because I think it would be considered, and a lot of the young voters would. I know a lot of African-American voters would. I mean, I think they would be so outraged that one party would do this to somebody and not have the guts to just run on their own and win for what they are bringing, but instead through lawfare try to disqualify somebody. Either that, or I think there's going to be massive civil unrest in the United States. I mean, I think there would literally be a riot if they threw Trump in jail. 100%. But I also think that perhaps they don't even want the elections, right? I think that a lot of this stuff happening right now is going on where I don't even know if we're going to have an election. I think there could be a state of emergency in play. I think it could quickly turn over into a police state. I think that who knows, you know?
So, you know, that was kind of my next question is, you know, I've never talked this way. I've never heard as many people talk the way you just talked as I have in the last 6 months to a year, that they're doubtful that there will be an election at all. And that is obviously concerning, but there's been a massive escalation, not only in Ukraine and Russia, but now Palestine, Israel. Obviously, you have Iran on the table, and the wrong type of event, false flag or otherwise, terror attack, not only in the United States, but somewhere in the Western world, especially if nuclear, could really supersede our elections for the very first time. Does the United States ever recover if that in fact happens and we don't have an election in 2024?
Do we recover? I don't know. That's a great question. I have no idea. I don't think journalism is going to recover, right, from its Trumpitis, right? You know, that's one thing that definitely won't recover. I mean, objective journalism is in the mainstream is gone. It no longer exists. Anyway, as a side note, I just thought I'd throw that out there. I fundamentally believe that you no longer have any objective media. But what happens if with all kind of this confluence, as you say, of things happening right now, and now I think Putin just said that they're going to start testing some.
They've got nuclear missile drills that they're on the horizon. They have not named dates for. And yeah. Again, this escalation. You have Europe now talking about boots on the ground. Now, again, there have been boots on the ground from the Central Intelligence Agency, U.S. Special Forces, PMG groups. But now that you have announcements of these westernized nations, that means they're getting ready to mobilize the military and allow the media to report on it. That's the scary part, because the media hasn't been able to report on it. You know,
the whole thing's insane. I mean, it's could you just if you're an American and you're sitting there and you're debating or you're have a question about what's going on with Russia and Ukraine and is Putin a thug and all this stuff, just think about this. Would the United States ever allow Canada or Mexico to have Russia or China have nuclear weapons on its borders pointing to us?
Would we ever fighting allow ground wars on that border through proxy and providing them with the military personnel to do so. Trevor, we have run out of time. We could do this for a very long time. Thank you so much, brother. Hopefully we're going to have an election in 2024, and hopefully we can reinstate what is left of our constitutional republic. I'm not so sure that's going to happen, Captain, but we're going to try. Guys, we've run out of time. I will be back tomorrow night. We'll see you with more TNT after this.